Hello, I'm Tony Whitehill. This is number 0325 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0325. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Russell Hannon, author of Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling. He shares some bargain travel tips.
The most expensive mistake travelers make is ironically the first decision you make when planning your trip, and it's where and when we decide to go. We want to go to the same places as everyone else at the same time, weekends, holidays, and people come to me and they say, Russ, I want to go to this exact place. I want to go to Cancun in January and these days. How can I save money? And sure, there's things that we can do to get around roaming fees and cut the cost of a flight by a little bit, but there's so much we can do if you were to open up your options and lay out all the places that you want to visit over the next 4 or 5 years and selectively prioritize those that are least expensive to visit today.
Former Playboy bunny Robin Dykstra, author of The Widow Wore Pink. Is she surprised that Playboy will drop nudes from its publication?
You know, it's kind of a sad commentary on the accessibility of nakedity on the internet, that Playboy can no longer contend for that in that arena. So it doesn't surprise me that they're trying something new. Maybe they're going to make modesty their new mantra. I don't believe they're going to give up showing pretty girls, but they are going to cover them up now.
Stuart Nolman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman, and Book Banter examines the life of comedian George Carlin through the eyes of his daughter, Kelly Carlin. So here's 7 words you won't forget coming up on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0325, was Tony Whitehill, a radio personality at WSTJ. He does the new news and also sports play-by-play. And of course, you can also catch the Stuff File, which airs on WSTJ. That's in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Thank you very much, Tony, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A California woman whose photo of her engagement ring beset with her fiancé's wisdom tooth went viral says diamonds are so overrated. Carly Lefkis of Orange County, California said her relationship with her fiancé Lucas Unger has been unconventional ever since they first met at a music festival up here in his native Canada. So incredibly excited to marry my best friend, the man who knows that his wisdom tooth means more to me than a diamond, Lefkis wrote in her Facebook post. We have never been the traditional couple. Why the heck start now? Lefkis told BuzzFeed the ring, which bears one of the wisdom teeth removed from Unger's mouth at the age of 17, means more to her than a diamond. When we'd spoken about it, I said that diamonds were so overrated, she said. My birthstone is a diamond. I don't need one to prove how much someone loves me. He'd already moved all the way from Canada to do that. Lefkis said the viral photo has resulted in a lot of feedback, some positive and some negative. We thank everyone for their continued support and love and cannot wait to share photos of our wedding with those who appreciate the love we share. And for those couples out there who are looking to stray away from the traditional diamond ring, remember, diamonds are not always a girl's best friend. Your significant other is, and don't let other people tell you otherwise, she wrote on Facebook. Okay, I know there are some women out there who aren't buying this idea, and also some guys out there who right now are making cost estimates, you know, looking at jewelry stores versus a trip to the dentist. Elsewhere, a woman in Omaha is accused of trespassing after sneaking into a local zoo and being bitten by a tiger on Halloween night. 33-year-old Jacqueline Edie is currently being treated for injuries on her left hand at a hospital. Edie, who showed signs of intoxication and acted aggressively towards hospital staff, allegedly snuck into the Henry Dorley Zoo and Aquarium on Halloween night to pet an 18-year-old Malaysian tiger named May. Zoo officials say that upon reaching into the animal's cage, the tiger bit Edie's hand and caused severe trauma. A friend then transported Edie to the hospital. Police say the incident may have occurred at 4 a.m. The incident is currently under investigation by the Omaha Police Department. How Edie managed to enter the zoo is still under investigation. Executive Director Dennis Pate said additional cameras are being installed at the zoo, which is currently staffed by 24-hour security personnel and equipped with computerized locks for entry and exit points. Zoo patron Ron Hegg told local news that the tiger's actions were understandable. It's not like it got loose and attacked someone, Hegg said. It was just protecting its territory. Well, you know, that's a valid point. I mean, if you stick your hand into a tiger's home quarters at around 4 a.m., you might get it bit off. If you stick your hand into someone else's home in Omaha at 4 a.m., you might get it shot off. Anyway, there are lots of different kinds of kinky, that last story notwithstanding. Exhibitionism is one, getting naked in a public place. Food is another. But one 23-year-old woman in Florida decided to combine both in a Johnny Rockets restaurant. Video of the incident was posted on social media. According to the incident report, Angelic Valet walked into the restaurant topless and began turning over tables and chairs. A witness said her eyes were wide open. I'm sure everybody else's were too. And she was laughing and breathing heavy. Valet is accused of charging at several men in the crowd and taking off the lower part of her bikini. Police said she then laid naked on a table and poured ketchup on herself while dancing. A witness told Valet that the cops were coming, and she grabbed a towel and left, telling the crowd, "Look me up on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook," police said. She later came back with clothes on for her shoes and bag, but left again before officers arrived. Miami Beach police eventually caught up with Valet and arrested her on charges of lewd and lascivious behavior, incite to riot, indecent exposure, and disorderly conduct. Police are still searching for a man involved in the incident. He is also wanted on lewd and lascivious charges because cell phone video shows him touching Valet's nether regions while she was lying on the table. You know, Johnny Rockets can be an entertaining place to eat, but I didn't know they had added a floor show. Anyway, we have one more item in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Officials at a Brazilian prison said they captured a trained mouse used by prisoners to shuttle drugs and other contraband between cells at the facility. Gian Carlos Gomez, director of the Barra da Grota prison, said the tiny trafficker was spotted running through a prison corridor with bags of drugs tied to its tail. The investigation into the drug-smuggling mouse turned up 29 small packages of marijuana and 23 packages of cocaine. Gomez said officials are reviewing closed-circuit TV footage in an attempt to determine who was behind the scheme. They attached a hook to the mouse's tail and then used it to carry the drugs and other goods from one cell to another, Gomez said. When the animal arrived at its destination, a prisoner took the mouse and removed the hook from its tail. A video shared by prison officials shows the tame mouse allowing investigators to pet it on its head. The mouse was released outside the prison, according to officials. What? The mouse gets off scot-free? You know, as amusing and cute as the story is, I think the bigger issue is not that the mouse was ferreting around the contraband between cells at the prison, but rather how the drugs got into the prison in the first place. Now, that's something inquiring minds would like to know. And of course, the mouse could have been the kingpin, which, as I said earlier, they just let him go. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Would you love to plan a winter getaway, but you're still paying off your summer vacation? Ultra-economical travel expert Russell Hannon says your summer vacation likely cost you 5 times more than it needed to. So, how do you travel on a budget? Russell is the author of Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling More and Spending Less. And he's on the line with us right now from Alberta with some possible answers. Hi, Russell.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Is part of the problem the mindset of people going on vacation? And the reason why I say that is, you know, you go somewhere, you're thinking about buying something or spending something or doing certain activity, and when your rational mind says, check this, stop this, don't do this, the other half of your brain says, I'm on vacation.
Well, you know what? We tend to suffer from something when we travel. I call it budget amnesia, where we're so travel deprived in many cases that we throw the budget out the window, all in the name of saying, I'm not going to deprive myself over this, basically this 1 week that I have away. And really, I consider travel to be the business of selling temporary luxury. And that's why travel, why essentially the average trip of a family of four is probably about five times what it would cost you to basically live at home for a week. So average family spends about $4,000 on a one-week vacation, which is your monthly cost of living. And what I often say is that if you take the average three-star hotel that's $150 a night compared to a one-bedroom apartment down the street that goes for $30 a night or $900 a month, you're paying five times more while traveling. And see, the most expensive mistake travelers make is ironically the first decision you make when planning your trip, going back to what you're talking about, and it's where and when we decide to go. We want to go to the same places as everyone else at the same time, weekends, holidays. And people come to me and they say, Russ, I want to go to this exact place. I want to go to Cancun in January and these dates. How can I save money? And sure, there's things that we can do to get around roaming fees and cut the cost of a flight by a little bit, but there's so much we can do if you were to open up your options and lay out all the places that you want to visit over the next 4 or 5 years and selectively prioritize those that are least expensive to visit today.
Okay, so what was the aha moment for you? I assume you didn't wake up knowing exactly how to travel on a budget. Was there something that happened to you that said, okay, I've got to rethink this and as to how I travel?
Well, you know what? I was a late bloomer in travel terms. 10 years ago, I thought I had to settle for taking one big trip a year. I would spend, I'd basically save up for months prior to a trip and spend a few more months paying off the balance. And, you know, ironically, at the same time, I worked in lean management, and my job was to find ways to get better results in less time using less money. And I said, there's got to be a way I can apply this towards travel. And essentially what I started doing is I started leveraging, trying to find the best websites out there for the best prices and leveraging them with best price guarantees and credit card travel benefits, also with loyalty programs, and leveraging them all together to multiply my savings. And that's really the key difference where you can really make a quantum leap in traveling on a budget.
Okay, so what's the first thing? Somebody listening to this right now and they say, I like what he's talking about. Perhaps I'll go out and get his book, Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling. But what are some of the first things people should know when they're planning a trip if they want to do it on the economical side?
Well, you know what? Some of the basic fundamentals is to consider shoulder seasons. For example, if you want to go to Europe, consider spring and autumn. And depending on where you are, if you're in colder countries, that's just midsummer weather when you go there in spring or autumn. Consider alternatives to the basics. For example, with hotels, what I often suggest is there's websites like campingcheck.com that give you access to nearly 700 campgrounds throughout Europe for a flat rate of 16 euros a night, when we tend to restrict camping to being close to home. Also, universityrooms.com gives you access to university dorms when they're empty from May through August or early September. And one of the best deals I saw was £35 a night at the University of London near the Theatre District in London, England. So by looking at alternatives, and with the internet and something that's really evolving, the sharing economy, we look at Uber and Airbnb, and those are just scratching the surface of all these private services that are increasingly available at a fraction of what big businesses charge.
Now, you might have just answered the question I was about to ask you based on what you said about going to London, but, you know, earlier you mentioned the fact that you should travel maybe at a time when seasonally when it's more economical to travel, like the spring or the fall. That's fine for me as a single person or for somebody who is in a couple, but what if you have kids and, of course, you're the slave of the school year and you wouldn't be able to go in spring or fall? What if you were in that summer period where that's when everybody has their vacation?
Well, you know what? My rule of thumb is if a local doesn't have to pay, there's always a way to get around it. For families, something that I suggest, actually, is home swapping. Now, there was a movie a few years back, The Holiday, with Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet, where they had exchanged homes. And I think that's a good idea for families to do that with other families with the same number of kids in the same age range, because that way you've got access to all the amenities you need. But what I recommend is don't do that with strangers. Actually, what I do is I live in the city, and I like to go into the mountains on the weekend, and there's people who are there who want to come to the city. So we got to know each other over time, and what we do is we occasionally swap places on weekends. And I recommend if you're going on a trip is to look at websites where there are people interested in doing these things. Another one is the vacationexchange.com, which is exclusively for people who have a second home, which could be a cottage or a cabin, and you let others stay in your vacant cottage when you're not using it in return for credits you can later use to stay with any other exchange members. So that way, you're actually leveraging your second home as a way of financing your accommodations while traveling.
Mm. Now, going back to the first question I asked and the answer you gave, which is, again, that mindset of going on vacation. You know, we live at whatever means we have. I mean, some people live above their means, but I mean, generally speaking, we try to live within our means. Is it true that for some reason we seem to throw that out the window when we go on vacation? We live above our means?
Well, you know what? It's a myth that travel has to be expensive. And part of the problem right now is when you look at the travel industry is they know that you decide whether you can afford your trip based on the posted rate. And that's why you're seeing this whole trend toward discretionary charges and surcharges and extra fees and hidden taxes. And so we're innocent victims from that perspective. Is quite often you don't know what your trip is going to cost until you get back and look at your credit card bill. And then we learn as we go on. So unfortunately, this is an increasing trend. And by being aware of it, you can better plan and take steps to at least anticipate those costs before committing.
One thing that's changed in travel in the last 20 years, and that is the fact that we seem to be, as a society, so connected. Now, that helps when it comes to planning your vacation, as you say, and looking for websites to find that that bargain out there. But being connected and wanting to stay connected can come with a price as well. Things like roaming fees, things like internet hotel charges. How do you get around those?
Well, you know what? I'm impressed anywhere I go in the world at how Wi-Fi is increasingly available. Even I was in the Philippines and couldn't believe how I was finding Wi-Fi in the malls, the restaurants near the beaches, the hotels. So if worst case scenario, you shut off your primary carrier, stick with Wi-Fi. Option B is you can get a SIM card at convenience stores just about anywhere in the world that you can put into your phone. Just make sure your phone is unlocked before you leave. Your carrier can always tell you that. And if your phone is not unlocked, essentially, they can do that usually for a fee that could average out to maybe $50. It's well worth the money you'll save while traveling.
Now, in your book, Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling, you mention a lot of the things I'm sure we're discussing right here, right now. But in the back of a lot of people's minds, one of the things that they concern themselves with is security, regardless of what type of security they're talking about. Security in using your phone someplace else. Security in the kind of room you might be in. Security in you know, even house swapping, as you just described. Do you also in your book share tips to keep one safe when looking for a bargain vacation?
Well, you know what? When we talk about saving money traveling, disaster prevention is a key part of that. And yeah, I really focus on how to, I say, disaster-proof your vacation, which is everything from saving yourself from those disasters that can end up costing you a lot of money. And if that can be as simple, there are some apps you can get that give you VPN access, very similar to what public corporations use to really protect the privacy of their data. So yes, there is a full section in Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling that helps you kind of navigate through those potential pitfalls so that you don't fall victim to any of those things.
Where is your favorite travel destination and why?
You know, I'm asked that a lot, and I do have to go back to Venice, just because that was a real special, unique place that you can't find anywhere else in the world, and because of its uniqueness, that stands out just a little bit above some of the others.
And going to Venice for that first time, where was that in your journey of becoming a travel expert?
Well, you know what? It was on a route, and I had met, while I was there, I was driving there from Monaco, actually, and I had stayed in Monaco for 10 days for the cost of cleaning fees through a connection, basically. I was staying in a bed and breakfast during off-season, and I got lost on the way there and met someone who was, he was a Canadian who had just been there 2 weeks before me, and he said, okay, go stay at this exact bed and breakfast. They've got the best price, the continental breakfast included. Before you take the ferry, make sure that basically you purchase your passes to get around on all the boats before you get on the island. And this person gave me all the knowledge that I needed to really do it economically, and it was just by chance. But that's one of the things that can really save you money, is by talking to people who've been to these places that can help you position yourself to get the best possible prices while you're there.
And it sounds like what you're saying, especially with that last answer, is that it's very important to plan your vacation, but also very important not to overplan your vacation, right?
Well, you know what? Planning your trip can become a full-time job, but it doesn't have to be a lot of work. Simply what I do is I sign up to some newsletters that every week basically give me all kinds of great deals that you can just cherry-pick from. My favorite one, actually, Sherman's Travel, sends out a weekly top 25 newsletter that has the best 25 deals that they could find online, and basically it's out of a number of different cities. So that's something I recommend. That way you've got things coming to you and you don't have to go out and look for them.
Excellent. The book is called Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling More and Spending Less. It's written by Russell Hannon. You can go to his website, which is breakthetravelbarrier.com. And Russell, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much. And anyone who does get the book has a bonus, a free one-year membership with homeexchange.com, and also $50 off a travel adventure with G Adventures.
Russell Hannon, author of Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling More and Spending Less. You heard the offer he mentioned that's on his website. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is number 0325, and you'll find links to his site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to a former Playboy bunny. Plus, Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Plus, lots more Stuff File news, including right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Well, funerals and burials in the United States and elsewhere are no longer always so staid. Most famously, one man was, per his instructions, lowered into the ground in his beloved Cadillac, dressing corpses in fanciful outfits such as the Green Lantern is not unheard of. And in October, after Mr. Yomar Aguero Colanzo, age 23, was killed in a shootout in San Juan, Puerto Rico, the family outfitted his body in his favorite blue tracksuit and propped him up at a table in his mother's tavern, playing dominoes and holding a drink and a condom as friends and relatives passed by to pay their respects. Well, I guess his mother's insistence on having safe sex has finally sunk in. You know, they say that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, and now we learn that the scorn doesn't necessarily have a statute of limitations. It all started when Barbara Jedinak, age 77, and her husband Stephen, who was 78, were fighting at their Edgewater, Florida home. The altercation escalated when Stephen admitted to what a police report calls additional infidelities 40 years ago. The confession, according to the report, caused Barbara to fly into a rage, and she allegedly threatened her husband with a beer bottle, cornering him with a knife, scratched him, and then tried to hit him with her car. She was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and battery on a person over the age of 65. Both are felonies. You know, it's nice to know Florida is cracking down on elder abuse. But seriously, when they say you can discuss anything in a marriage and hopefully find a way to work it through, no one gave Barbara that instruction booklet, did they? And in a similar vein, Ouray County, Colorado Sheriff's Deputy Derek Linnell was sent to confront 26-year-old Susan Skelton after her husband stopped by the sheriff's office to complain that she had hit him, beat him with a 2x4, and, when he jumped in the car to escape, threw the chunk of wood at him. The problem, according to the unnamed husband, his decision to be honest about a marital issue in hopes of improving his relationship with his wife, but that backfired. Unsurprisingly, Skelton's mood had not improved when the deputy arrived, the resulting report notes. She allegedly admitted to the 2x4 incident, and I also tried to kick him in the nuts, but he turned around. After that, things kind of went downhill, said Sheriff Dominic Jr. Matavy. She didn't want to go to jail. Well, really, whoever wants to go to jail? Anyway, it took two more officers to back Linnell up, and Skelton allegedly managed to bite one of the officers' hands during the struggle to arrest her. "We told Susan, you cannot bite a police officer," Matavy said, and she said, "Boo-hoo, expletive liar." So she thinks you can bite police officers? Anyway, she was charged with second-degree assault as an act of domestic violence, first-degree assault on a peace officer, and resisting arrest. She faces several years in prison. Boo-hoo indeed. Do you think her husband will wait patiently and faithfully while she's in jail? Still with romantic entanglements, Carolyn Westlake and Adam Davies worked together at the London, England Zoo, where Westlake was the meerkat keeper and Davies worked with the llamas. At a Christmas party, Westlake saw Davies with Kate Saunders, who worked in the monkey enclosure, and an argument ensued. "Things were being said on both sides that shouldn't have been said," Saunders admits. "I told her that I'd seen a text that she sent to him, asking him out for a drink while we were still dating, and the next thing I know, I was hit in the face with something very hard." Westlake hit Saunders in the face with a wine glass, shattering the glass and cutting Saunders' face. Saunders was rushed to the hospital, where she received 5 stitches and now has a permanent scar. Westlake was fired from her job, charged with assault, and found guilty. She was recently sentenced to 12 months of community service, ordered to pay £800 in compensation to Sanders, and £200 in court costs. Sanders, who Westlake had alleged had punched first, was given a final warning and banned from Zoological Society of London events for 2 years. Well, you know, that's what happens when zoo people act like animals. And when a student arrived at Pueblo County High School in Pueblo, Colorado, wearing a trench coat and gas mask, other students freaked out and notified teachers. That teacher reported it to administration right away, says District 70 Superintendent Ed Smith. Administration went to the scene and escorted the individual to the office. The girl involved had no weapons and explained the outfit was her Halloween costume. Yet the school called the police, who brought in their SWAT team to sweep the school. They found no weapons or other cause for concern. Naturally, the school realized it overreacted and gave the girl a one-day in-school suspension, and that's the end of the story. Right? Not really. Not in a zero-tolerance environment. The school has started expulsion proceedings against the girl because of the world we live in now, Smith says. We take all those kinds of things very seriously. You know, maybe someday schools will take their educational mission even half as seriously as they take zero-tolerance items. Which reminds me, if you think that zero-tolerance story is asinine, then try this one. 14-year-old Aaliyah May says when she saw her former teacher in the hallway at Moody Middle School in Henrico County, Virginia, she, as a joke, tossed a baby carrot from her lunch at the teacher. The miniature vegetable bounced off the teacher's forehead, and school officials called the police. May was suspended indefinitely and is being criminally charged for assault and battery with a weapon. Wait a minute. It's a carrot. If it's a soft carrot, it might not be as offensive, offered the local television station's legal expert, Todd Stone. I don't even know how to combat the stupidity, says the girl's mother, Carrie May. I can see a couple of days in school detention or even a couple of days out of school suspension, but this goes way beyond that. The girl has been out of school for over a month. I don't think it's something a judge would want to find her guilty of, Stone suggests. They may offer her counseling, sort of a carrot at the end of the stick. Yeah, speaking of which, if a baby carrot is a weapon, how would the school officials classify a stick? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? By now, you've probably heard the news. Playboy magazine is involved in a cover-up. By that I mean the nude photos that are synonymous with the publication will soon be no more. Many are surprised by this, including former Playboy bunny Robin Dykstra. Robin was a spokesperson for the Lake Geneva Playboy Club. She's also the author of The Widow Wore Pink, a true story of life after loss and the transforming power of a loving God. She joins us on the line right now from Michigan. Hi, Robin.
Hey, Peter. How are you today?
Just fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So how did the news hit you when you heard that they were going to stop doing Playboy nudes? Did that surprise you?
At first, I thought it was a joke. But then I realized that Playboy has always been on the cutting edge of things. And it doesn't surprise me that they're setting a new standard. It is kind of a sad commentary on the accessibility of nakedity on the internet, that Playboy can no longer contend for that in that arena. So it doesn't surprise me that they're trying something new. Maybe they're going to make modesty their new mantra. I don't believe they're going to give up showing pretty girls, but they are going to cover them up now.
Mm. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you were a former Playboy bunny, and you were a spokesperson for the Lake Geneva Playboy Club. What was life like for you as a Playboy bunny?
It was a great job for a young girl who didn't know what she wanted to do. Most of the women that I worked with came from the Midwest, and they were hard-working girls who didn't know what they wanted to be when they grew up. We were saving money to go to college or hoping to find Mr. Right. And the Playboy Bunny job was a very safe, protected environment in which to make some excellent money and bide our time until we figured out what was next.
Mm. And so it sounds like you, even though you didn't know what you were going to do, like so many of the girls at the time, you had a plan. There seems to be a working plan to work at the Playboy Mansion, save some money, go to school, that kind of thing. So there was a plan involved, right?
There was a loose plan involved. I had gone to college a little while, a year and a half, and decided that I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a teacher, and actually ended up being a Playboy Bunny trainer. So I trained other girls how to do the bunny dip and memorize the call-in sequence and navigate some of the more difficult aspects of the job, like handling customers who would be fresh. But actually, Playboy did a great job of protecting us. There was a security force at every club. I was actually in Lake Geneva, which was not the mansion but a resort, so I didn't actually ever meet Mr. Hester, but was very grateful to him for the opportunity that he gave us and how much protection he provided to us. Every girl had health insurance and dental insurance and a very strict set of rules to keep us as safe as possible.
What about the aura of being a bunny? And by that I mean a lot of the girls came from the Midwest. What did your family say? You know, my daughter's a Playboy bunny.
Well, my mom was not thrilled about it when she first heard it. My mom's a PhD. She has a she's a highly educated woman and had higher expectations from me than walking around in skimpy clothing, hustling cocktails. But she said she's always been supportive. And I think most of our parents, the ones that knew what we were doing, were supportive. It was a glorified waitress job in many aspects. We raised a lot of money for charities by playing basketball and driving golf carts around and standing in front of convention products. It was okay.
Looking forward, because the Playboy bunnies, to a certain degree and to a smaller degree, still exist, would you like a daughter to be a Playboy bunny?
You know, as I'm going to say no. I have since become a Christian gal and lead Bible studies, and I can see how slippery the slope is in any kind of environment like that. So I would say no. I felt like I was safe there, but I would prefer my daughter or my best friend's daughter not take advantage of the opportunity.
Okay. Well, you touched on the changes in your life, and I want to go in that direction right now. I mentioned your book. It's called The Widow Wore Pink, A True Story of Life After Loss and the Transforming Power of a Loving God. A little background to this story. I understand that you were widowed twice in a short period of time. You're married again now. But that obviously had to be a very trying time for you. I'm reminded of one of the things that my mother and grandmother always said, and that is, the Lord doesn't give you more than you can handle. Do you believe that in your case, it was just your strong constitution that got you through the trying times that you have been through?
I am a pretty strong person, but I do believe God gives you plenty more than you can handle, and that's so that we understand that we are not God and need Him. When I was widowed twice in 4 years, which is what I talk about in the book, The Widow Wore Pink, I fully depended on my faith in Jesus' death and resurrection to get me through it. It was very comforting to know that I would see my husband again, that I had expectations of spending eternity together in heaven. I was supported by my church family and close friends, and that really carried me through.
It's a blow for any woman to go through it, but what was it like for you when it happened a second time? Did you feel like you were targeted?
There was just a moment when I thought I must be a really slow learner, but I just think that when we live in a world and God allows us each to have free will. Maybe you've heard that term, free will, that we get to make our own choices. God doesn't make us robots. And my husband's free will killed them. My first husband was a smoker, heavy smoker, and he died at 39 of a heart attack. And my second husband was a pilot, and he made a judgment call in the midst of a thunderstorm that killed him. He just made a mistake, and their choices spilled on me. So I don't feel like I was targeted or cursed or jinxed or being punished. I just know that other people's choices are going to spill on us.
In writing this book and sharing your story, was there a particular type of person, man or woman, that you were trying to reach with your story? Who did you write the book for?
I did write the book for women who have made a mess in the past, women who took advantage of temptations that were put in front of them and didn't have the courage or the strength to walk away. There were things in my past that I am certainly not proud of, but I feel like God redeemed those, and I want that woman to know that God is for her too. And of course, I want that the other woman that I wrote the book for is the woman who has been a good girl her whole life and really didn't deserve the things that happened to her. You know, the house burns down, the kids start run away from home, the husband loses his mind, and you wonder, what just happened here, and how do I get my life back? I'm hoping that my story in The Widow Wore Pink answers those questions.
And in writing the book, was it a cathartic process for you, going through that and reliving it to write the book?
Yeah, I don't recommend that. casually speaking, I would say it was the hardest thing I've ever done, because it did stir up all those old memories again, and I thought I had processed it and healed through it. But when I started to write about it, it was really tough. Now that it's done, I'm really glad that I went through it. And yes, it was cathartic, but it was tough sledding.
And one last question, bringing us back around to the original topic, and that is Playboy magazine. When the new look Playboy comes out, will you be curious to see what they've done with it?
You know, I will be curious, but I probably won't buy one.
Not even for the articles?
Not even for the articles.
Robin, thank you very much for being on the program with us. Again, we should mention your book, The Widow Wore Pink, A True Story of Life and Loss and the Transforming Power of a Loving God. People can find more information by going to your website, which is robindykstra.com. That's RobynDykstra.com, correct?
That's correct. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin, for being on the program with us.
My pleasure, Peter.
Robin Dykstra, author of The Widow Wore Pink, A True Story of Life After Loss and the Transforming Power of a Loving God. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0325, and you'll find links to Robin's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. According to a new report, the amount of money being spent on television ads by lawyers is growing faster than the amount spent on TV ads by any other industry in America. The report, published by the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform, estimates that in 2015 alone, TV ads by lawyers will total almost $900 million. In fact, their television ad spending grew 6 times faster than all other television ad spending during this period. But it's not just TV ads that personal injury lawyers are spending their money on. They're also aggressively seeking clients on the internet, social media, and mobile devices. The report found that 23 of the top 25 Google keywords linking ads to user searches are for personal injury law firms. Let's be fair, this spending reflects a major change in philosophy for lawyers over the past few decades. There was a time when they felt that the idea of buying advertising to promote their services was unseemly. My, how times have changed. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses. But recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world,
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we are indeed cracking a spine. Stuart Nauman is here once again with Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter. And, you know, we're comedy buffs. You have to admit, we are.
Absolutely.
We are comedy enthusiasts.
Absolutely.
Now, what was the first comedy album you ever heard, Peter?
The first comedy album?
First comedy album.
It's not going to be a big name.
What is it? Yeah, tell me.
Davey Bold.
Davey Bold.
Exactly. He was a lounge act, kind of a Catskills type comic performer. He had one album called This is Davey Bold, and I split a gut laughing at that one. That was the first one. The second album I would have had have been Bill Cosby's a Very Funny Fellow. Right.
Which was produced by Alan Sherman.
Which was produced by Alan Sherman, yes.
Mine was, believe it or not, wasn't Evening with Groucho, but it was AM and FM by George Carlin.
Ah.
Which was when I first heard about Al Sleet, the Hippie Dippie Weatherman.
Well, George Carlin, that seems to be a case of bad parenting on your parents' part there. How old were you when you got the George Carlin album?
Oh, let's see. Well, I first heard AM and FM, I think it was about 10 or 11, but I bought one of the first comedy albums I ever bought, besides Cheech and Chong's Wedding album, was Carlin's Occupation Fool.
Yes.
I think I was about 14 when I bought that one.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
But why I'm mentioning that, especially George Carlin, because on this edition of Book Banter, we're looking at a book about the late George Carlin, but written by another Carlin, his daughter Kelly, because the late George Carlin will always be remembered by his legion of fans as the trailblazing, cutting-edge, socially relevant comic who forever changed the world of stand-up comedy with best-selling albums like AM and FM and Occupation Fool and Class Clown also, and a routine such as 7 Words You Can't Say on TV and A Place for My Stuff. But for his daughter and only child, Kelly Carlin, George Carlin was not only her father, but to her, the artist who stood on a stage and challenged her comfort zone, the comedian who taught her what was funny, and the warrior who taught her who was just and what was just.
And the very first host of Saturday Night Live.
That's right. In fact, exactly 40 years ago.
Yep. Actually.
But he never did a sketch. He only did stand-up. He never did a sketch on that first show. But Kelly Carlin personally witnessed all the sides of what made up George Carlin, from budding comic to comedy legend to flawed yet loving father. And it's that multifaceted portrait that forms the basis of her absorbing, emotionally charged memoir, A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George. The book is based in part by Driven to Distraction, which was an autobiographical solo show that she wrote and occasionally performed more than 15 years ago. But she traces her father's life and career and how he viewed his path to show business, basically as he called it, his Danny Kaye plan. And also it tells the story of how an only child grew up in the shadow of her famous father and her lifelong struggle to carve out a suitable career and find her own voice.
Okay, I have to ask, why is it called the Danny Kaye plan?
Well, I think he actually Danny Kaye was one of Carlin's favorite comedians.
Okay.
I guess he wanted to follow the path that Danny Kaye went to success from clubs to movies to from television to movies. He wanted that same way. He wanted to do it the same way Danny Kaye did back in the 40s.
Ah, okay.
So that's what he called his Danny Kaye plan. But he didn't get to the part where
I can't see George Carlin in Holiday Inn, by the way, but I digress.
No, but I don't remember seeing him going to Africa for the United Nations and, you know, or for UNICEF for that matter, which Danny Kaye did.
Exactly.
Yes. But Kelly Carlin witnessed a lot during this 45-year journey, and she had to endure all those long absences from home while her dad was on the road trying to establish himself as a comedian during the mid and late 60s. She witnessed many of her dad's career transformations, highs and lows, and how he became a legendary figure and source of inspiration to future generations of comics. The narrative also gives equal time to how such a life affected Kelly directly, because while growing up, she became a virtual buffer between her father's cocaine addiction and her mother's almost destructive alcoholism. Also, Kelly battled her own drug and alcohol problems, as well as an almost damaging first marriage to a rather drug-addicted, codependent husband, and countless anxiety attacks before she managed to graduate from college with 2 degrees and carved out a career as a therapist, and in which many of her clients were industry people and comedians. Wow, what are chances of that? But the impression I get when I read this book is that Carlin was a father who was part unconventional, at times brutally honest, but always supportive and loving. George Carlin may have been a legendary comedian to many, but he knew when to be a father to Kelly.
So it wasn't a woe is me sort of daddy dearest kind of thing.
No, far from, because okay. I found Carlin Home Companion. It's not a daddy dearest type of memoir. It's more of an honest emotional journey into what it's like to be the child of a major celebrity and how one can do the difficult, delicate feat of balancing what it's like to be the child of a big time show business star and basically being yourself.
Excellent. So the book is called?
It's called A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George by Kelly Carlin. It's published by St. Martin's Press, and it's $31.50.
And since I brought it up, what do you think of books like Mommy Dearest?
Well, put it this way. The first one, I mean, Mommy Dearest, the original Mommy Dearest itself.
Yeah.
I read it when it came out in paperback in 1979. I couldn't put the book down. I thought it was pretty fascinating stuff. But, you know, people started writing memoirs that were almost like Mommy Dearest copycats sometimes, or trying too hard to be another Mommy Dearest.
Yeah.
And it just fails sometimes. Sometimes they work, like Gary Crosby's book Going My Own Way. And sometimes they don't, like B.D. Hyman's book My Mother's Keeper, which is about Betty Davis.
Okay. So, again, getting back to Carlin Home Companion, what other book can you recommend in that genre?
Well, I recommend because in later his life, Carlin became a best-selling author. Let me give you his 3 books that he wrote, which were basically collections of his wit and wisdom. Brain Droppings, Napalm and Silly Putty, and When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops? And along with his posthumously published memoir called Last Words.
Excellent. So again, this week's book is?
It's called A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George by Kelly Carlin. It's published by St. Martin's Press, and it costs only $31.50.
And as I mentioned before very quickly, to all the Hollywood celebrities out there, or sorry, the kids of Hollywood celebrities who write horrendous books about their parents, especially after they're gone, there's a special place in hell waiting for them.
But it won't be for Kelly Carlin.
But it won't be for Kelly Carlin, exactly. How can people find you, sir?
Well, when I'm not performing the 7 words you can't say on television, you could find me in print in the Montreal Times. I've almost said the old name. The Montreal Times in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost at a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I got a couple more Stuff File news stories to share with you right here, right now. 43-year-old Karen Dolly woke up around midnight in her Indianapolis home to the sound of a man's voice. She immediately jumped out of bed, turned on the lights, and saw 30-year-old Jacob Wessel, who had allegedly broken into the house. Dolly immediately attacked, punched the man about 10 times, and cornered him in the bedroom. She reached for a drawer to retrieve her gun, but opened the wrong drawer, and since there was no gun there, she reached for her backup weapon, her sword. Dolly, who had been a member of the Society for Creative Anachronism since she was 18, is skilled at medieval combat fighting. She held Wessel at sword point while she called the police, who arrived within 2 minutes and arrested him on felony residential entry. Dolly credits her training with the SCA, where she regularly fought against much larger, more experienced men with helping during the break-in. I definitely didn't need to work on my aggression, I guess, Dolly said. She's now using those lessons to help her in her latest passion. She's a new recruit for the Naptown Roller Girls Roller Derby League. Because, you know, roller girls respect any gal who can take down a punk without using a gun. In October in the U.S., the federal government finally unloaded the two New Hampshire properties it seized in 2007 from dentist Elaine Brown and her husband after a 9-month standoff following their vow to die rather than pay their back taxes to the IRS. Their 100-acre compound became a magnet at the time for an array of sovereigns and tax resisters who were rumored to have booby-trapped the property to ward off law enforcement. And the 2015 auction only partially guaranteed that the property was free of hidden explosives. And by the way, back in 2007, it was reported that Dr. Brown was one of three U.S. dentists who, independent of each other, had become obsessed about federal taxes. Anyway, the Browns are serving 30-year prison terms. And considering it's only a partial guarantee that the land is free of booby traps, that will keep the new owners on their toes. And what is it with dentists and their taxes anyway? That's what I want to know. Anyway, let's wrap this all up the only way we know how. Yes, boys and girls, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff I present the Idiot of the Day.
Pleasant Grove, Alabama police say a call about a stolen car led them to the largest cocaine bust in that city's history. On November 3rd, a patrol officer answered a call of a stolen vehicle by OnStar. An officer responded to the address given by OnStar and observed evidence of narcotics at the house. Investigators obtained a search warrant and found over 4 pounds of cocaine and nearly $250,000 in cash. Police say the suspect, 45-year-old Jaran Radcliffe, offered the officers $50,000 in cash not to arrest him. All he bought himself was another charge, said Lieutenant Danny Reed of Radcliffe's actions. Now, we know trying to bribe the cops on the spot is a dumb move, but that's not Radcliffe's biggest moment of stupidity. Why, oh why, would you steal a vehicle without checking if it has an internal GPS or an OnStar system before you literally drive it to your home? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0325. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0325. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.